Today on the Rights and Wrongs podcast, we are going to be talking about veterans' benefits, the challenges of veterans getting those benefits, the importance of being your own advocate, and some negative parts of veteran culture that affect these issues that we're speaking on. Welcome to the Rights and Wrongs podcast, where we look at political issues such as rights, privileges, and misconceptions. Today, we're going to be talking about the issues of veterans and what they face when they come home and the root causes of them. Today, I'm joined by Chris Rossi. He is a veteran, a former staff sergeant from the Army, and he works with the NGO group, the Veterans Northeast Outreach Group. I'll have him introduce himself. First, I was going to ask if everyone could do a quick moment of silence with us. This is not just for the veterans, the fallen, which it is for, but it's also for everyone else that's affected by war. There's currently 20 military conflicts going around the world, and potentially more if you watch the news. And I just want everyone to think about the innocents, the warfighters, the rebels, for whatever cause, the people defending our nation, and the people that get caught in between. Thank you. So, Chris, I kind of introduced it a little, but do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, I joined the Army when I was 21. I went to college first and I wasn't really ready for it. So I joined the Army 2007 as an infantryman. Went on to go to South Korea as my first duty station. Came home. I was stationed at the 101st Airborne, 3rd Brigade, Rokkasans. We deployed to East Paktika Province and Afghanistan. That was in 2010. We were there a year. So while we were there, we were in a remote outpost, and we were met with a lot of resistance from Chechnyan and local Afghani Taliban fighters. So we had a very eventful deployment. I ended up I received the Purple Heart when I was over there. But then after we came home, I ended up coming down our north, just like most of us, to go to recruiter school. I attended recruiter school in 2011. At the end of 2011, my first and my only recruiting assignment was out here in Massachusetts. So I finished out my last couple of years, opted to not re-enlist. So I got out in 2015, and I had transitioned into human resources based on my recruiting background. And then now I am the Director of Human Resources at Veterans Northeast Outreach Center, based in Haverhill, Massachusetts.
Well, thank you, and thank you for your service, and happy belated Veterans Day.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you. I also forgot to say, for all you cry-on-munching brothers of mine, happy 245th birthday. I forgot to say that, yes, as well. For anyone that's listening that doesn't understand that joke, it's what we call Marines, for cry-on-munchers. It's just a weird inside joke. But it is, you had a really active and interesting career. I caught glimpses of the documentary that you showed me, because you had an embedded reporter, which showed a lot of interesting things. So you've come from both the administrative and the warfighting part of the military. And then, did you find that to help you, or was that more an issue? Sorry if these are personal questions, when you try to transition into civilian life.
No, I mean, so when you're transitioning from a combat MOS or position, and then you're going to be a recruiter, you need to learn how to kind of be delicate in the way that you say things. Because, I mean, a lot of the times you're going to be with high schoolers and their parents, and, you know, everyone wants to know, are they going to go to war? Are they going to see combat? And I got asked the question enough that some research. So I had some talking points. I'd be like, well, you know, out of the 1% of the U.S. population that joined the military, only about 1% of them will actually go and see active combat. And that the odds of being killed in a car accident while driving in the state of Massachusetts are actually exponentially higher than the odds of being killed while you were deployed in a war zone. So as crazy as that is, it was the facts. So making that transition, I've always been kind of a good speaker. So that wasn't the hard part. I think the hard part was being away from the brothers that you had deployed with. So you had all that camaraderie, and then you're out and you get put into the, basically the civilian world. You know, there's no military base around. So it's a change. You know, it's not, it wasn't the easiest, but it was definitely it was a new experience.
I find it like very true how you talk about the trying to find that way of being tactful and speaking with people. And it's also very different. We come from two different branches because I was from an electrical engineer and people like, oh, so you're not going to see combat. It's like, I'm a Marine. Like, they doesn't matter. They kind of teach you. My MOS is what right. They call a priority MOS. So like, they don't put me on the front line because there's not many electrical engineers, but it's still combat. But it is also a very interesting thing where I don't think a lot of people understand. The US has one of the biggest militaries in the world. But as you said, there's very few people that will see combat, but it's also just due to advancements in technology. Like, the Air Force is one of the bigger branches, but only a percentage of them are combat pilots. It's like, and the Marine Corps is shrinking in combat roles. We just lost the tank battalions this year.
Yeah, I think that's a big misconception, is that if you join the Navy or the Air Force, you're going to be a pilot of some sort. And the Navy and the pilot, or Navy and the Air Force, the Army is definitely is the biggest branch. So they're smaller than the Army. And it's like, how many planes do you really that we have? Do you think that everyone that joins is going to be a pilot? And they don't understand, too, that there's all the additional tests and, you know, qualifications and stuff that you have to get along the way to be able to do that. But
yeah, it's really confusing when people look at the military, just because it's not what people think it is. Like, the strange fact that I found out is the Marine Corps is the smallest branch, technically the Coast Guard smaller, but I'm never really sure if they're DOD or DOJ. They're kind of our weird stepbrother in that way. But there's
more Homeland Security now.
Yeah, but there's more fighter pilots in the Marine Corps than the Air Force. And like, that's a strange thing, but when you look at the mission, it makes sense. But it also creates a lot of strange things too when you come to transition. Like I said, I was trained as an electrical engineer, and people go like, oh, it's great, when you get out you have a job. I don't have the certificates. Like, they, you can go through the programs and stuff like that, but even still, if you go through the programs, most companies aren't going to hire someone that got trained in the military for, because I'm only trained on a very specific forms of gear, and I don't have a college degree. So there's a few issues of transition. Another issue is, a lot of times, like, it's interesting you talk about language with purely language veterans. I feel like have a lot of jargon. Do you feel like that's a huge issue when working with veterans in the outreach programs?
Well, so I mean, when I transitioned and I was trying to find a certain job, I'm looking at it and I'm like, man, I have all of these schools and a degree, and I have, you know, all this stuff going on, but literally no one was calling me when my resume was out there. And one day I just sat down and I was like, hold on, maybe I'm doing something wrong. So then I looked at my resume and I'm like, all of this is military jargon. Like, so nobody knows what the heck I'm talking about. So I had to go back through and kind of, I hate to use the term dumb it down, but to kind of just make it so that anyone can understand who I did, like what I learned from that and the type of experience I received from this. So once I did that, then I was more of a commodity in the workplace. Now, some of the veterans that we work with now, it's hit or miss, because some of them, they want to work, but they don't have a skill set, or they don't have the drive to like commit themselves to something like that. And then you have others that they just don't want to do anything. They just want to collect. They want to get their VA compensation or their retirement pay, and then they want to sit there. And I mean, I could go down a big rabbit hole with that, but you know, you have some of them that play that woe is me act of, I did this or I did that, so I can't do anything now in the civilian workforce. But it's a touchy crowd.
I know what you're talking about. When working with, like, as a work study for Massasoit, was working as a work study, and like, a lot of times you'd help people that are vets like that. You have the situation where you have the vets that come out and they want to use their benefits to the best of their ability. Like, I used it to get my bachelor's and paid for a good portion of my master's. But you do have those, I don't want to call them the small minority. Like, you, they just poke out in your head because they're the outliers. But people that just want to work the system. And the sad thing is, I feel like they're the ones that get a lot of the light for people asking, like, why are we giving the benefits if they're just going to abuse them? And I never really heard people say that out loud. I've heard in hushed tones. But I understand the sentiment. But at the same time, I think it also, I'm not sure your personal opinions on this. We called it SEPs and TAPs in the Marine Corps. I'm not sure if you had a similar thing in the Army.
Yeah, I can't even remember what we called it. I think TAPs was one of them. But basically, yeah, you know, before you out-process, you have to, there was a list of things. So you had to create a budget. So you had to know how much money you would need to make in the civilian workforce to be able to be the equivalent of your military pay, includes your BAH. So that's your housing allowance. Now, the housing allowance is not a taxable benefit. When your paycheck is, $3,000 biweekly, and then when you go to do your taxes and it says you only made like $28,000 that year, but it's because a lot of that wasn't taxed. So when you get out, people don't realize, okay, well, if you were making this or making that, now all of it's going to be taxed. So in order for me to comfortably transition, I need to make at least $70,000 a year in the civilian workplace. You know, you create this, you write your resume, and then you literally just go through these and meet and check off the box. And I remember they looked at the resume and they're like, oh, looks good. And then, did you do a budget? And I said, yeah, it's right here. And they just kind of glanced at it and they're like, all right, cool. And then stamped the paperwork and that was it. And I'm like, wow.
Yeah, that's a lot of the problems that I dealt with. And it's interesting you talk about like a lot about the pay scale, because I remember that system and they're talking about you need to make this much. But the military doesn't prepare you for real life. A lot of times you'll get like these 18-year-old kids, and this is the first time they've got real money in their pocket. Even as a private, mm-hmm. It's joke pay. Like they might only be making what they call the vet. Like they'll complain, like, I'm only making $14,000 a year. This is a joke. But their housing's being paid for. Medical's being paid for. If they go to the chow hall, it's being paid for.
Three meals a day. Yeah.
The one thing I never understood, they never really taught financing when they first get in, which they should do. Because I would have, when I was a corporal, I would have Lance Corporals and Privates where I'm looking at their pay and they would have like negative bank accounts. I'm like, you live in the barracks. How do you have negative pay? Because I remember like I'd still go out with the guys and stuff like that and have fun. And like I didn't drink when I was in, but I still owned a car, had a motorcycle, had fun, went out to the bars, played pool. And like I still always came out more in the positive. And then you expect without teaching these skills, they get sent out. And the SEPs and TAPS is the same problem on the educational standpoint, because they tell the vets, these are your benefits, A, B, C. They don't talk to the VA and come out. And then they come up to me and yell at me because I'm messing up their benefits that were told to them wrong.
Yeah. And I think it's one of those things. So those benefits are out there, but there's no cookie cutter answer to any of these benefits. Everyone's situation is a little bit different as a veteran. So there might be out of the list of 10 things that you have to do, you might have checked off box 4, 7, and 9. You're supposed to do them all in order, but you did those three already. You didn't tell that to the person you were asking the question. So they're giving you the answer based on assuming you had already done certain steps when you in fact hadn't. So then it just becomes confusing. And I think a lot of it, and I know my brother-in-law, not with the education, but with some of his other, his VA stuff, he would get started and it's just frustrating to him because he feels like he's not getting anywhere. So he eventually just says, screw it, and stops trying. So I actually set him up. We have a benefit specialist, and that's all she does. She works out in Metro West, which is like central Massachusetts. And all she does is help veterans get their benefits. So I set him up with her so that she can get him squared away. But obviously not everyone has something like that at their disposal either.
Well, that's one of the main issues when it comes to vets, where people outside of the system don't understand, is you have to understand another language for VA paperwork. It's a total, and it's not even military language, it's VA jargon, VA code. And the sad thing is fortunately, like where I went first for Mass Associate, their team is on top for veterans benefits. Like they know everything. And it's sad to say, because I've went to other colleges, they don't have certifiers that know what they're talking about. So any vets that are listening to me or guys that are still in, before you go to college, learn your benefits. Like you need to take care of it yourself, just because of issues we're talking right now. One other thing I wanted to go, which is ties into benefits, which is prominent in the Marine Corps. I'm sure it's prominent in the Army, where you have people that don't go to medical because they're scared of being like classified as malingering. And you and I kind of went out before, because this is why you'll hear people like, oh, like I messed up my shoulder in the Marine Corps. And people are like, why don't you get anything for it? It's like, I never went to the medical. There's no paper trail. There's no proof I hurt myself. But there's more of an issue when it comes to mental health that you and I were talking about this, where people are scared to even admit that they might need counseling.
Yeah. I mean, it still is. And, you know, I think it probably always will be a stigma surrounding getting the mental health piece of it, because there's a lot that goes into it. And when I was getting home from Afghanistan in 2011, when you wanted to seek out help, I mean, it was potentially a career ender because they could classify you as, you know, being suicidal, even though you're not. But sometimes they felt like you were backing them into a corner, that they're saying, oh, so you never thought about suicide. And it's like, well, sure. Like, on my shittiest day, of course I thought about suicide. Doesn't mean I'm actually going to do it, but they'll label you as that. And then all of a sudden you're not eligible for promotions and allowed to carry a firearm when you guys go to the range. You can't have live ammo and whatever else. So then all of a sudden your options are super limited and your chain of command's looking at you like, what do you mean you're suicidal? And everything gets, it's like playing telephone. Now, I'm basically telling the story. It was one of my soldiers. I didn't have that issue when I was in. Mine occurred later on after I got out. I saw it happening to a lot of my guys, and there was that stigma around it that despite them saying that, oh yeah, you know, we want to support you and get you the help you need. But when we got home from deployment and you're going through your, it's like, were you in process back in the States, and you have to go to each station, and one of them is the medical. And they're like, did you do this? You know, have you ever, when they ask you the same questions, and all we did was walk through and we just gave them the answers that we knew that would get us through it so that we didn't have to deal with it. And that's not the way that it should be, but I mean, that's the reality of it.
No, it's like sad because I'm just like flashbacking to a lot of stuff. And it's like, I can even admit that I'm guilty of when someone would go to like, oh, someone would be classified as a watch list, and then they get stigmatized by the entire unit as being weak, or it's,
yeah.
But it's, when you think about it, it's like you're taking 18-year-old. It's weird to think now, because like if I look at myself now, like if I look back at myself, I was a child, I was a baby, and you're going to give me a firearm, potentially send me to war, hype me up on all these caffeinated pills and stuff to try and keep me awake and alert while getting screamed at. And then they get mad at you because like, oh, like your mind just breaks. Like certain people's minds just break under that pressure. And it's not something you can know. And it's not a bad thing if your mind breaks. That most people I know that have had the proper treatment afterwards, they come out back stronger. But the military doesn't understand it in a lot of ways. So therefore it's bad. And it's a strange.
Yeah, because the whole idea is that, you know, basic training, they want to break you down to build you back up. But I feel like the building back up piece, or when they're breaking you down to, they're not a trained clinician, so they don't know, oh, I've pushed some so-and-so to that point, so now we really got to back off of them. Now, from what I've heard, that they now do like stress cards and all kinds of other stuff. So if you're feeling overwhelmed and whatnot, you can pull your stress card and then the drill sergeant doesn't mess with you anymore for 24 hours. So I don't know how true that was. I mean, I know I certainly didn't have that when when I was in basic training, but I feel like it's great in theory, but it's not solving any kind of problem.
It was also kind of strange though, if you look at like I'm sure because you have a minor in sociology, mine I'm more focused on sociology. Boot camp's just a strange thing to put children through anyways, and it's always the kids that break the hardest are never the ones you really suspect. It usually seems to be like the what I call the big fish from Little Pond people, from people that like the guys that you would think would be the perfect soldiers, like the quarterbacks of the football teams and stuff like that. And I'm not saying that's a generalization, it's just the few people I've seen crack tend to be those. And it is, the military is getting you at 18 years old. Like they don't have your entire background and your entire history of mentality, but there's just, the mind is a very complex thing. And it's just sad that we have this stigma, but it also sad that it comes back when you get out. And I hate to say it, but America as a general, as a whole, is not the best place, veteran or not, for mental health. And that's why we could go back into, I know your group, Veterans Outreach, is doing a very strong fight now against homelessness. And that has to be a difficult fight because there's probably so much intersectionality with substance abuse in there and mental health issues. And
yeah, I mean, the list is endless and it's very complicated. I had gone through it myself. You know, when I transitioned out, I would say I was pretty successful in it. I mean, as far as like my qualifications and everything, like I got into the civilian workplace, and where I fell short was that I was more concerned with supporting my wife and our household and making money, and I did zero self-care. So what started in the Army is drinking and just drinking socially. It had turned into something else. When I got out And I think, like, really when I went into my dark place, it was kind of all of a sudden I realized, wow, you know, I lost my sense of purpose and I have no structure. And, you know, I'm stressed out about paying my rent and where else that you can think of that was thrown at me. And so that was my go-to. I was like, all right, well, I guess I'll just drink. But what started for me with the drinking was I came home and my nightmares were so bad that the only way I could prevent them is if I drank until I blacked out. And then, you know, over time, that kind of snowballed. So what turned into what was social drinking was now a physical dependence because I had been drinking for so long that it was like if I woke up in the morning and, I mean, I had the shakes by 7 a.m., so I would have to start drinking. But then I guess my fall from grace, I don't even remember, but I was on my way home from an interview and I was on the phone with my wife and I was saying, like, I'm so tired, I'm so tired. And then I woke up in jail. I had no recollection of what happened. And apparently she found me in my car. I was like almost to the house, but I was passed out. And then she was getting me in the car. And I guess I tried to reach for her phone. But while she was calling the police, because she went to high school with a lot of the officers and most of them were veterans and they knew me and they knew I had my demons. So she was calling them to be like, hey, can you guys come help me? Not, oh my God, he's hurting me. You know, unfortunately, that's the way it got twisted, despite her saying otherwise. That's Massachusetts for you. So yeah, I had that issue. Yeah. So then I had that. And then a year and a half later, I got arrested again because she was drinking. And then when they showed, they arrested me. And I'm like, I didn't do anything. I wasn't in the house. You know, I'm trying to plead my case. So because it's my second offense and I'm in Massachusetts, my family's in Ohio, no one has access to my bank account. Turned into this whole cluster. I ended up stuck in jail for 2 months, only to later get out and have everything just be completely dismissed. I mean, it was crazy, but it was kicking the ass that I needed to be like, all right, even though that wasn't like my fault, I didn't do anything, but I need to get my life in order. So I taken care of myself, my top priority. I didn't worry about making money. I didn't worry about any of that. I found VNOC or VNOC found me, whatever way you want to look at it. And they put me in their temporary housing. So I made taking care of myself my full-time job. And I took it just, and it was over, a little over a year probably that I was doing it. And then before I finally got to the point, I said, I think I'm okay now. My therapist is like, yeah, like, I think you're doing really well. But man, like, you have to want to do it. And I think that's where a lot of it can get lost because you can throw all these benefits and all these things at these veterans, but you lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink, you know, no pun intended. But, you know, if you keep telling them, oh yeah, well, we have all these benefits and we'll do this and we'll do everything for you. You know what? It's just going to be a vicious cycle and you're going to see them again. And sometimes, you know, they just don't want to change. You know, like, fortunately for me, like, I'd probably be dead right now, but I saw it, man. I saw the light. I was like, all right, man, I'm going to do the right thing.
Well, I hate to say it, but it sounds like the arrests were a happy accident. And for those that aren't familiar with Massachusetts law, as me and Amber talked about, I'm mostly in favor of this law. There are situations such as yourself that happen. If domestic violence or what seemed to be a domestic issue is called, someone has to be removed from the house. If I'm sure, I think that's still a state law, and that's what's going on here. It's not like if someone's trying to read into it. I don't know the full case or anything, but like that is a law in Mass. It has good benefits. It sounds like in a roundabout way, it helped you. I just want to clarify for any non-Massachusetts and non-American listeners to understand that part of the story. But it's also
So the law changed when I think it was Jared Remy. He was like a famous sportscaster, or his dad was a famous sportscaster, and he got arrested for domestic violence. Or they didn't arrest him, but they just said, you can't stay here tonight. But ultimately, he went back and murdered her. So then that's when Massachusetts like revamped their laws. And now it's like, if there's basically anything that happens that the call is for a domestic, the male is the one that's going to be locked up.
I think they changed it to either or, but it's just one of those things for a tidbit information. The other thing that kind of feeds into what we're talking about with homelessness in mental health is back in, I believe, the 80s, Massachusetts closed all the state mental health wards. That's also another reason why we have a lot of issues in Mass. For people that aren't from the United States that are listening, I'm sure you've also learned from the elections and other stuff, each state kind of runs as its own country. So when it comes to these issues that we're talking about, it's a state and community issue, also a federal issue, which makes a lot of this very difficult. Because I'm sure when you talk to like your buddies back home or your guys that used to be in your unit that are across the country and they ask for veterans help, it's probably very frustrating that you can't always have the right answer.
Yeah, and the veteran benefits are so segmented. So the benefits that you would get as a resident of Massachusetts are not the same as the benefits you would get as a resident of Ohio, or the accessibility to said benefits. There's so much of a difference. Despite the VA being a national healthcare system, things still do vary state by state. So it gets really complicated.
I'm also curious how the VA education is handling COVID, because we were talking like before about base allowance housing. Vets get paid based off VA that for their education, like I did. So I was in the Boston area, so I was making around $3,000. I think it went up since
$2,800.
Yeah, $2,800. But if you're at all, but that's because I was an in-class student. I did all my classes online, but you have to be at least one in class to get that. If you're 100% online, I think you get national BAH, which is like $600. And I'm wondering if that's becoming an issue. And like these are the flaws with systems that are nationally based.
Yeah, I can't speak to that. I don't honestly know. I don't know how things have changed with COVID going on.
But I did want to also breach in there. You made a really interesting analogy when it comes to vets when they have problems is the loss of sense of purpose. And it's something I know I struggled with when I got out. It's because like, oh, I'm a veteran. I came from the Marine Corps. I have to own a pickup truck. I have to get my license to carry. I have to do this. And it's like, because the fact you're so used to having the identity as soldier, sailor, then you become a vet and like you think you have this idea. But I think that's also really important for people to realize veterans part of your identity, but it's not the main. Like the one way I've realized with myself, it's like I'm a human first, an American second. And then veterans kind of farther out. And it's like, not that I'm not happy about being a veteran. It's just like you said, you have to self-care yourself as human being first. And I wonder if that mentality is also kind of what hurts a lot of people because of the fact that like they think of themselves as a soldier and a warrior. Then they leave the military and they're like, I don't know what I'm built for because the military did tear us down and build us into what they want.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a few ways that you can go about it. I mean, despite being prepared, or what I thought to be prepared to separate from the military, it's like when you get out, man, and you're still kind of confused because it's like, wait a second, I was going to school full time for the last few years to finish my degree, so now I have a degree to get out. I have my resume squared away, like I'm ready to work, I'm motivated, but there's just something that's missing. And for me, like it wasn't really my identity as a soldier or anything. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love to live vicariously from time to time and be like, wow, you know, I was a real badass at one point in time. But now I'm middle-aged, I'm fat, and I have knee problems. Like my identity as a soldier went away pretty quick. But it was more of the brotherhood, I think. I was used to having these guys around all the time. And then, like, yeah, sure, we talk on the phone and everything. But I don't know, man. I think eventually it's like, okay, well, I'm not the soldier. I'm a veteran, but I want to be a successful civilian. You kind of get caught in purgatory of which way you go. But I think ultimately, you know, I think it wears on everyone.
And I think that's a really good point, too, about like missing the brotherhood is I never really understood when people meant they missed the brotherhood until a couple years out. And it's strange because we were talking about mental health issues and a lot of this stuff. And when we're talking about, the best way I can explain to anyone what is in the military, it's just basically in a very intense fraternity at a college. Like if you were having a bit down moment, or like if you just weren't like feeling it, because your buddies would, half my friends wouldn't even knock on the door. They would just kick the door open and like see what's going on. And if you don't want to get out and like you're acting strange, you don't have to explain to like my best friends would never They still are my best friends. Like, they're brothers to me to this day, and I talk to them constantly, but they could just see the way I react to something and instantly know something's wrong and move on from there. But then when you get out, it's just, you get your apartment by yourself. Like, no one's going to come down, and those brothers now live thousands of miles or hundreds of miles away, and it's, you completely lose a support network you didn't even know you had. And I think that's...
Yeah, because, I mean, the bonds I had, especially, like I said, my deployment was pretty bad, and we all got incredibly close with one another because that's what you cared about. And I know everyone says, like, oh, well, you're over there fighting a political war, and you're, you know, whatever reasons they have for it. But it sounds so cliche. At the end of the day, it comes down to, when I was over there, it was just me and my guys, and that was all I cared about. You know, you don't even think about being back home half the time when you're out there, because you're more worried about, you know, does so-and-so have enough water? You know, are we doing enough ammo in case we get into another firefight? Is so-and-so's back bothering him? Is he going to be able to carry his pack for the rest of the patrol? You know, there's like all these other things that you're thinking about all the time. And then a lot of it, you didn't even have to say it. Like you were saying, like, they would knock the kick in the door. And that was the same way of, you would just be able to read it on my face. I wouldn't have to say anything. And I could tell you what I wanted you to do. Or, you know what I mean? I don't know. It makes sense in my head. Maybe I'm not explaining it very well.
No, you're explaining it as best you can. It's that X factor. And it's something I feel like thousands of authors have tried to explain. But it's sad to say it's one of those few things and bonds that you won't really understand. Possibly, like, you can see it with nurses and doctors probably right now. They're probably feeling those same bonds that we are in the war against COVID, because that is a war, in like police and stuff like that. But it is a very strong issue that we don't really talk about. Oh, I did want to ask, we were talked a little bit about education. You don't have to, you don't want to, but did you want to talk about, I find this very important, because with education in the United States, they seem to be, and a lot of universities are, and a lot of colleges are very pro-veteran. But you do have a few colleges that seem to just want the government paycheck and benefits. And this is something where it goes telling people you have to watch out. And it seemed like you kind of had one of those issues with a university.
Yeah. So you're referring to would be like the yellow ribbon schools is what they called them.
I went to one of those.
And those were schools. Yes, that was, I did too. So the yellow ribbon schools, essentially what they do is they adjust their tuition rates, meet the criteria for your tuition assistance, which is the $4,500 a year benefit you get while you're still active duty. So there's certain like caps that you can only get. They won't spend more than X amount of dollars per credit hour. So ultimately, I think it has to come down to, it's like $750 a course is the max the military will pay the school. So the schools will adjust their tuition accordingly.
The tuition's based off the state, because it's state residence, so it's whatever the most expensive state school is, that's the max for the privates, and then the privates will, so no, you're right, I was just, that's where they get that number from.
Yeah, that makes sense, because I was in Tennessee, so yes, you have your tuition assistance, but then when you want to use your GI Bill, it's the same thing. They want to allow more veterans in, or accept more veterans. Now, you can argue this both ways, but I got a great education. Like I finished the last portion of it. I was doing 100% online, but actually liked it a lot better. I learned a lot better. I retained the information. But when you were, my college would, they were this thing where if you were on the dean's list for, you know, however long, or if your GPA, I can't even remember what the criteria was, but they basically said, hey, do you want to go to Washington, D.C.? You know, we'll fly you down there, put you up in the hotel, feed you. You know, we just want you to talk about your experience with the school. You know, we're not telling you what to say. They didn't try and coach us or anything. They're just like, we're a for-profit school. Mm-hmm. A lot of higher ed is not for profit. But in my opinion, I don't care who's profiting off of it. If I'm getting my education that's regionally accredited, that's all I care about. So when we were talking, we had to walk around and talk to like a bunch of senators and congressmen and women. And, you know, we told our story. I was like, yeah, I'm a veteran. I got, came home from deployment. So, you know, going to school full time on campus isn't an option for me. And same with 99.9% of all service members. So saying that, look, I'm getting a quality education. I don't care if it's a for-profit school or not. So like you said, there are some schools, and I think they've started to kind of weed them out over time. For the most part, I mean, most of the schools are good. It's just you had to do your own research, too. You got to make sure that the school's accredited.
Well, the other
why are you going to go to a school?
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
I had one issue with a college, and I'm not going to go after it. The people that I worked with were sweet, and they're helpful, and they did the best they could. But the other problem is the colleges don't know what they're getting to. Like, what they need is a VA certifier, which they basically certify someone in the registration. You're the VA certifier. They take, I think, an online course and get things done. But it's that VA certifier's job to keep up to date with the VA laws, rules. And, like, they can change, like, a sentence, and it throws everything off. Fortunately, a couple of the colleges I went to were right on top of it, because they set a person directly to only be this VA certifier. And that was her job. And like, it sounds like, oh, you're just doing like 10% of the school might be veterans, but she has to do three times the amount of work per student. So it really adds up. But a lot of colleges, those certifiers are professors, or there's already have another full-time job on top of that. And you kind of just get into the stack of listings. And it's when you're dealing with people's benefits, veteran or not, that's not the smartest way to deal with things. That's where I think where a lot of we're talking about is you need to look into what you're going into, but don't always assume the college has your best interests in mind, because they probably don't. It's board of managers that make half these decisions.
You're a number at the end of the day, but that's the mindset that you need to have. And that's what I would tell these kids when I was a recruiter, is the military already knows what they want from you. So it's very important that you know what you want from the military. So establish those goals before you even enlist. Like mine was, I wanted to have at least one degree by the time I got out, you know? So I achieved that, and I almost completed my master's too. Now I just procrastinate, even though I should, I'm like two classes away.
But honestly, but, like, it's unthinkable to me that you finished your bachelor's while you're in. Like, I never had a second to myself.
Well, that was the benefit of being a recruiter.
That's true.
Initially, I wanted to play, because if you would claim you had like PTSD, they wouldn't put you on recruiting. So I was like, oh, I'll just go play and pretend like I'm crazy. And then I thought about it, and I was like, you know what, though? This isn't a bad thing, because as a recruiter, I'm going to have a laptop and everything with me at all times. So if I have 20 minutes while I'm going to meet with parents, I can bust out a homework assignment. And for 3 years, I mean, I was a full-time student and a full-time service member, and I was a master of procrastination, but it was like every day my wife knew that, like, you can't mess with me because I have a 20-page paper due, and I had a system, and I don't think I ever got below an A minus on my writing assignments. Fortunately, that's like one of my strong suits, but that was my thing. I'm like, all right, well, I got 20 pages to write, so let's get after it.
But no, kudos to you. I still find that just ridiculous, because recruiters have so much, they have downtime, but when you're on uptime, it's go, 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 from what I understand.
The numbers are like never ending. You could put like 100 people in this month and they'd be like, okay, but you only have one this lined up for next month. Where are the other 99? And you're just like, what? Are you serious? Like, I've been busting my ass and they don't even care, but it's a numbers game. That's all.
So we are coming up to like the just past the 45 minute mark. I was going to ask, is there anything that I didn't cover that you think needs to be acknowledged that the general populace doesn't fully understand about veterans and the issues? And
yeah, I mean, I guess I would just touch it on the going back to the substance abuse and the homelessness and the suicide and everything like that. A lot of the times those things are synonymous with one another. So like for me, you know, my PTSD was the root of the problem. It wasn't that I had the genetics to even be a drinker. I had ulterior motives for the reasons I was drinking. But, you know, that ultimately led to being arrested. And then I was homeless because I wasn't allowed to go home because our court case was pending. So now I'm homeless. Now I don't know, like, I'm lost in the sauce. I don't know what to do with my life. But it just kind of goes to show that it's that vicious cycle. And if you're going to continue to throw all these benefits at veterans, because you'll have, and I know you and I talked about this the other day, but all these benefits, these politicians go around and say, oh, you know, all my the veterans in my district are, you know, we have all these benefits for them. But the issue is they have these benefits. They exist somewhere, but there's zero guidance on how those veterans could access those benefits. So when it comes to a homeless veteran, there's a lot of criteria that they have to meet. And if they don't know what that is or who they have to go to or what program is going to put them up or prevent from being evicted, you know, there's all kinds of stuff. So the accessibility of the veteran benefits is just between that and, you know, identifying the root cause, whether it's PTSD or the loss of a sense of purpose, or, you know, if they developed some kind of substance abuse, that there are so many things identifying that those are trying to get to the root of it. And, you know, a lot of the times a veteran doesn't want to be told that they have PTSD. They're not going to respond. So I think identifying and relating to them as a peer and saying like, look, I mean, that's why I have no problem telling my story, because I genuinely hope that if I tell it a million times, that at least one person will hear it and it's going to help them. And I think sometimes too, it's just that someone needs to get on their level, go to their turf, build the initial rapport with them, say, maybe I've never been there, but I can imagine what you're feeling. That sucks. So is there anything I can do to help you? And just get them right back on track.
No, that's, and you're hitting on like a lot of really important parts. One major thing, which we talked about before too, is PTSD is a word that's thrown around a lot, and like everyone expects this cookie cutter thing. And I suggest everyone to go out if you have the chance to the VA to get tested. It was one of the first things I did when I got back. Like, granted, I didn't see much. I went to Afghanistan. I was in Helmand province. I saw rockets and stuff explode and stuff like that, but like I myself never was in combat. But I still wanted to check myself out. And like, I still suffer from things. I wouldn't call it PTSD. I always call it more conditioned alertness. It's like, you also have to be aware that you've been trained. There is a difference between conditioning and PTSD, but when it comes to mental issues, even if you're good, I still suggest talking to a counselor. There's nothing wrong with it, but it's just when you're like, oh, I'll know when myself is right. That's like asking a broken computer to try and figure out if another computer's, if your own computer's broken. It's just a very strange, and I hate to use that analogy. And but if you are having issues, it's not something to be looking bad or negative to. But it also does feed back when we're talking about veteran issues. When it comes to these organizations, like there's so much money in veteran organizations that these issues should be healed, but the root causes aren't being covered a lot of times. And a lot of times I feel like that's also because, and I hate to say this, and I'm trying to not be too crucial, but like some people, like they only want to help the veterans, but they don't realize if they focus that energy on helping everyone with mental health or all the homeless, you're actually going to keep bringing everyone up together. When you're trying to focus on one group, it can be a little self-defeating. And you do want to help the people because they did defend our rights and freedoms. But when you're fighting a sociological problem, you have to hit it at the society level, which I think is a lot of the discourse that we're not having.
Yeah, and I think there's a disconnect too, because veterans do present a unique set of experiences. And a lot of that stuff is not replicated by, or not replicated in the civilian. However, if you look at it as just traumatic experiences, me being in a firefight or being shot is going to give me nightmares, most likely. But someone can develop PTSD from getting in a bad car accident, being mugged. So PTSD should not be associated with combat, because that is not what it is. PTSD is a heightened response, or a heightened I forget the wording that I'm trying to do, but it's when you experience something that is outside the realm of a normal human emotion, whether it's, you know, super intense, super painful, can be anything. But then PTSD is the end result, and PTSD presents itself in millions of different ways, whether it's drinking or locking the door times before you know, get in the car for the day. Like, there are so many different things, you can't classify them all. But
yeah, and it's true too.
I think that's the disconnect too, you know?
No, it's true too, because we were talking about that. It's, there's some issues in the data, but there's always issues in the data. But like when you're talking, it's really important to say that PTSD is not only a military issue, because of reported cases found of PTSD, women outnumber men astronomically due to sexual assault and sexual harassment issues. But you also do have that issue. That doesn't surprise me at all. But we also don't know, because there's a huge toxic masculinity issue, as we talked about before, in the military, where people are scared to So we don't know the true amount of men that have PTSD to measure, because of, even if you're not in the military or in the policing, there's still that other aspect of reality you have to approach in society.
I mean, you're assuming, or you're basing all of your data off of those that have come forward and been diagnosed.
Yeah.
So the margin of error for all the ones that haven't talked to anyone or haven't been diagnosed by anyone, you know, it's so hard to even estimate, but it's a scary thing, and it's a serious disorder, but people do recover from it. And there are a lot of treatments. There are a lot of options that can help. I don't think PTSD will ever, it's not something that's curable. There's no cure all for it. There's no magic pill, but understanding and acknowledging, like, okay, I know I have severe PTSD, but I also know what my triggers are. So I didn't learn that overnight. That has been some therapy and working at it. And so I can tell you that when I get stressed out at work and I start zoning out for a second, I know I got to take a break because I'm about to like get super angry. That's part of my PTSD, but I know when it's coming now. So I can help to kind of mitigate that. I know that's just one example, but.
And that's true. And that's like a piece of PTSD, like that is a part of military. The anger is like a lot that isn't really talked about, because most of my friends that I've talked to, doesn't matter gender roles or like section or like sexuality or any of that. One thing I've noticed that a lot of vets have problems with is we have problems with our anger. And it seems as like a pot, like I'm not sure how it is in the Army, but in the Marine Corps, you screaming at your subordinates, it seems like, yeah, that's a good leader, which that's not leadership. I'm sorry to say. You can get, I've learned when I became a sergeant, I can scare my troops, but with a whisper more than a scream.
Oh, absolutely.
I became the soft talking one. And when I got quieter, that was an interesting thing to see with a few certain Marines that I had.
Yeah. And I was saying at the beginning about those that they would be the ones that would be talking the most shit, and they'd be the first ones to crack.
Yeah, and it's,
but it was the same way with like in firefights. You'd have guys that'd be like, oh, I can't wait to go out and kill Taliban. And then the first shot rings out and they're in the fetal position hiding behind a tree. It's reality. But the guy that was quiet, the guy that didn't say a word, that's the one you want with you, because you don't even know what's going on in his head, but you know that you're lucky to have them on your side.
And that's the crazy thing about it, though, is war is hell by all definitions. But like, that's the thing is like, I don't ever know how to explain it to a lot of civilians. I know a few of the people here when I was taking the human rights program, it's strange that I study human rights as a master. And it's strange because there's been times where like I've seen people in Afghanistan and they're like, well, like I had my rifle up and ready because we're getting ready because I don't know, someone has binoculars and looking at my base. What's going to go on? I'm like, what do you think? It's like, that's a target about 300 meters away. And it's weird to think of another human that way when you get, and I don't know how to explain that to most people that like, I don't see a human. I just see, okay, like I'm not thinking of that, like windage, this, and it's a strange mindset to have.
Yeah. I don't even know how you would go about successfully explaining that, but it's like, you have to, it's an emotional detachment, and you have to like objectify that person. Because if you say, oh, well, that's a 12-year-old little boy, and he has a mom and a dad, and I'm sure they're wondering where he's at right now. And you go into his whole backstory, but you do that, and then you might hesitate, and it might not even be him. It might be his dad that's with him that's doing it. But all of a sudden, they shoot at you, and one of your guys gets killed because you were more concerned with thinking about his life story.
But the thing we have to worry about, though, when it comes to the veterans is, just because we're not thinking about that in the second, we are going to have to deal with the ramifications of those moments later on. And that's where a lot of our problems come today, though. I feel a lot of it is you go through months and months of combat where you have situations just like you're talking about day after day after day, and that becomes the normal. And now you're trying to ask people that are emotionally disconnected to get connected with their emotions. And it's just like trying to drive a manual car after 2 years. You're going to get frustrated.
Yeah, exactly. Like I always, I've been referred to as stoic. You know, a lot of the time, because analytical, I'm a problem solver, and something happens, I don't overreact and I don't freak out. I'm probably going to be more quiet than I was before, because I'm already trying to work it in my head, thinking, all right, what are our options? How do we go about this? And I take the emotion out of it. But when you are over there for a year, your response to everything basically is fire back, shoot, kill that person. And violence comes the appropriate response. So then you come home and you're in Walmart and someone's doing something stupid or complaining about the line being long, and in your head you're just like, you don't even know, like, you're complaining about a long line I was getting shot at, and you just want to like go punch him in the face. But that's the reality. You're like, you're so used to just being able to respond to something ridiculous and be violent about it, but it's no longer an acceptable response.
Well, it's not even just with like, that's a huge example too, but even for those that don't see combat and they're just spent most of their life in the Marine Corps, like not the Marine Corps, but the military, especially when you're a higher ranking, if you're in the shop or what we call like the PX or something, and you see like an 18-year-old or a couple like young, like 20-year-olds goofing off in the PX, and if you're older and you're loud enough, you can just say, oh, hey, stop that. They don't need to know who you are. You're older than them. You probably outrank them. They're going to stop what they're doing and walk away. You try and pull that. You and I try and pull that in a Walmart right now with a couple teenagers. It's not going to work. And then you lose that control of your life. And I feel like that's something people don't conceive of.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a whole other issue you could go down there too, because that's a cultural issue that we have right now in the United States. And with all these movements and, you know, there's all these back end agendas for all of these said movements, and none of them really make sense. And I don't mean to say that to discredit any of them, but I do a lot of reading and it doesn't make sense to me. Maybe I'm missing something, but you know, the Black Lives Matter movement, I get it. There were some black people that were shot by cops. I'm not discrediting that, but you go out and riot in the streets and everything, that's not acceptable. So when you're, and then people say, well, all lives matter, and then all of a sudden that's a racist thing, and I'm like, no, you can't do that, because you're defeating the whole purpose. Now
I think that's also, no, I get where you're coming from, the sentiment. It's a complicated issue. I that's a whole nother rabbit hole, but I think a lot of what we're talking about with that is goes right back to veterans, is that, because the problem is you and I are both pushing 30, so I can say middle-aged white men looking into an issue of something that we've never experienced, if that makes sense. When you're talking about Africa, like that's,
yeah, the, if whole, you want to, like, systemic racism and things,
yeah,
like,
so
that.
But like that's a perfect segue into looking into how things are with veterans, because a lot of people are trying to help but they've never dealt with the issues and going like that. And I understand what you're saying with All Lives Matter, and there are issues with the BLM movements, but then you also have other crazy movements such as the Proud Boys and other things where, like, I understand this frustration, and there's always understanding for frustration. I agree with you on riots, but I think the riots also feed back to something that you and I were talking about, they're the minority, because you and I both talked about how people sometimes have bad experiences with veterans, especially on Veterans Day. There's this,
all the veterans come out of the woodwork, their free meal.
Yeah. And it's like, and the thing is, like, I'm not trying to, like, Applebee's, thanks for doing that, because there are veterans out there that are homeless, they are starving, they need, and it's a good thing and it's a thank you. But it's also, you have those like 18-year-old kids that are now getting this idea of, I know we had a few Marines when I was like a young private that had this sense of pride that turned into entitlement.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's just rampant across American society. And I think that ties perfectly back into BLM with the riots and stuff like that. Because I can only imagine, I was talking to someone that got stuck in a riot as a friend, and like they were at a protest, some rioters caused a problem, but like now you are a peaceful protester, five people cause a problem, the police are coming in to react, and it's like you have police moving on you, you're going to defend yourself. It's a really strange cyclic of issues. And but the people, like, you have to do, like you said, and even admit that there are parts that I don't understand. I don't have all the answers, but all we can do is read and learn.
Yeah. But I think one of the things that's been lost is, I'm sure that they taught it in the Marine Corps, was just being a silent profession. I don't have to go out and say, hey, everyone, look at me, I'm a veteran. You know, I know what I've done. Like, I'm proud of what I've done. My family's proud of me. But at the same time, like, I'm the last person that will be asking if a store has a military discount. Like, I'm not even thinking of it like that.
I think there's like more two often stores than not.
My wife's always the one, like, hey, do you guys do military? And she's not doing it maliciously, but it's just because I don't know. I don't like the attention. I would rather content my mind knowing that if something kicks off today and an active shooter comes in, I'm going to be the guy that saves us, because I'm going to be the one that will react
in order
to protect, you know?
No, and it's a true point, because I've dealt with that situation with ex-partners or, like, ex-girlfriends, and you have that situation where they find out with a military discount, and they find it, and, like, they're not doing it maliciously, but I understand you're buying, like, a $300 pair of boots. Like, if I was buying that, I'd probably ask, too. Like, there's a threshold that I'm at, but if I'm buying a candy bar, I'm not doing it. The only store I always ask, I think, is, like, Home Depot, but that's because, like, when I'm at
Home Depot. Yeah, I was going to say Home Depot if I'm buying a new grill or something. It's like, hey, I'm going to take that 10%. I appreciate it.
But there is, like, basically what we're trying to say, and, like, I don't usually like to swear, but it just doesn't matter what organization you are. Like, we need to be vocal. Be vocal to the way that you are. I'm also aware I'm a military vet that's a white guy and college educated, so I can do a podcast and people listen. So I understand I don't have to get out there and scream in the streets. Some people have to for issues. But do your best to be respectful, and hopefully people will reciprocate it. But not everyone is respectful, especially in nowadays, and that's on both sides. We are coming up to the time to clear everything up. Did you have any organizations such as Veterans North, Northeast Outreach, or like any other programs that you would suggest vets to take a look into if they need?
Yeah, if there's a veteran that's in Massachusetts or like Southern New Hampshire, definitely reach out to Veterans Northeast Outreach Center. Our website is vneoc.org. And that has kind of an overview of all of our programs. So if you do find that you're in need, our website is not exhaustive. That's not everything. We have, like I said, a benefits, the director of benefits. So if you have questions on benefits and anything like that, she's the subject matter expert. If you're in need of housing, you can just call. Our number is listed on there too. And if we can't help you, we will help you find someone else that can.
Yeah, that's perfect. Honestly, all I can really say is there's a bunch of different benefits groups out there. Do your research, though, because as we know from the history, I know they've turned themselves around, but like Wounded Warrior had their issues a few years back. If you're going to donate, make sure you donate to someone that you know where the money's going. The Semper Fi Fund, I know, is a great one for that. And they don't just help Marines. They help everyone. The other thing I can say is just learn your benefits yourself, and the best advocate you can have is yourself. Just you need to learn the language, be aware of what's going on. We did also talk about like how PTSD is an issue across, and I know it's a sensitive thing, if people don't want it on their VA record. And I understand there's reasons why people don't want that. There are thousands of professionals out there, and there's a bunch of organizations out there, especially right now with COVID, that you can contact and possibly get free counseling and free therapists. They love to help out vets too for a lot of the organizations. And that's probably, I can't speak for all of them, but I don't think it's going to get back for any reasons. I know some people get testy about their mental health on records.
Well, so that's a misconception in itself, that if you are diagnosed with PTSD, your employer is not going to find out. You know, no one is going to find out. You're protected by the HIPAA privacy laws.
That's exactly
in the US. So none of that information goes anywhere. So if you do want to seek treatment, that you do have undocumented, because you want to have that history there, and it's going to help if you switch providers or anything like that. But I just want people to know that your information, it doesn't go anywhere. So they should be secure in knowing that.
I agree. But when it comes to certain, depending on the mental health issue, the paranoia is very common in a lot. So,
well, we could go down a rabbit hole with that.
Oh, yeah. No, I completely agree. I understand HIPAA laws are a lot stronger than people think. You're not going to, like, people get scared if they go, like, a huge thing in Massachusetts, people get scared if they get classified with PTSD, they're not going to get a gun, or they're going to take their guns away. One, if you feel like you're in that way, maybe just don't have one, but that's a personal choice. That's a constitutional right, so you try to do what you think is best for yourself and your family. But as you said, it's a HIPAA protection. It's one of those strange damned if you do, damned if you don't situations in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it really is.
But other than that, I wanted to say thank you so much for being on.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rights and Wrongs podcast. If you did, please consider supporting us. You can either donate on the website at rightsandwrongspodcast.com, buy some merch to help support us, get a cool mug or a beanie, or become a Patreon supporter to get a few cool perks. The Patreon is Rights and Wrongs Pod on Patreon. If you would like to be a guest, feel free to email me at rightsandwrongspodcast@gmail.com. And if you would like to be a writer on our articles, do the same, and my editors will get back to you. Thank you so much, and have a great day.